syndicated source material.
Hey, it's another opportunity to give you a little bit of a post-edit preamble. So yeah, this episode we're getting ready to get into was the fourth episode of Source Material that aired on the Rattlechin Broadcasting Network. This episode is about Deadpool Killustrated. It was a fun book, very, very meta. This episode released October of 2014. This is 2 years prior to the film releasing Deadpool, released in 2016. I think it was in February of 2016. I mean, Deadpool took off after that film. So real quick, the episode that you're about to listen to originally when it was aired, it's about 1 hour long. After edit, all that good fun stuff, I've got it down to a little bit more than 30 minutes. It's hard to believe, you know, going into editing these after I did them. Now, granted, this is only the fourth episode, but I've learned so much from editing my podcasts over the past 6 years that there was so much that needed taken out. I think I mentioned something about how my kids was sick. I talked about my friend that let me borrow the series that inspired me to do the episode. And I also was talking about how wrestling was inspired by comics. So anyway, this four-issue series is about the most meta thing I think I've read in quite a while. Back then and up till now, really. All right, let's get the episode started here. Here is Deadpool Killustrated.
Welcome, everybody, to Source Material. My name's Jesse Starcher. And today we're on our fourth, and this is going to be a bonus episode. Like I said, I try to do one every 2 weeks, but if I got the time and I've got the motivation, I am going to try and sneak one in there. And this will be my fourth week straight doing some comic book reviews. I shouldn't say reviews, comic book recaps. I give you a short review, but it's mostly a recap. Just so you know, purpose of the show is so that you, if you never had the chance to read what I'm covering, you'll have a good idea of what happened in the book by the time you come out at the end of this. So, we're going to be talking a pretty popular character in the Marvel Universe right now. A guy by the name of Wade Wilson, Deadpool. The book is called Deadpool Killustrated. Four-issue story arc came out. I believe it came out, I think it was last year. Date on this is March of 2013, so it was last year. Probably came out in January or February 2013. So, and I'm going to get into who Deadpool is, just in case, you know, you're a listener and you don't know anything about Deadpool. So, in this book, Deadpool was definitely, and he's been an anti-hero for quite a while. When he first showed up in Marvel books back in the 90s, he's created by a guy by the name of Rob Liefeld, and I think Fabian Nicieza. Really wish I could say his name right. But those two came together and created Deadpool, who was a villain, showed up, I believe, in New Mutants. He showed up in New Mutants. I can't give you the number. I want to say 89, but I don't know if that's right or not. But anyway, he was a villain that showed up to take as a mercenary to kill a guy by the name of Cable. So he kind of snowballed from there. He became a really popular character. Liefeld was a hugely, hugely popular artist back in the early 90s. You know, a lot of people just loved the character design, loved the way he looked, and loved his attitude. Now, we'll go ahead and get a little bit into Deadpool's origin here and what he means to the Marvel Universe. We'll make it real quick. I'm not going to go in depth, but Deadpool's basically a mercenary who he'll perform just about any deed for money or chimichangas. He's also the only word you can come up with is psychotic. They call him the Merc with the Mouth. Now, if anybody's watched X-Men Origins, by no means don't base what you see of X-Men Origins, especially at the end of, you know, base what you think Deadpool is off of that movie. But Ryan Reynolds does a great job at the, you know, when you first see Deadpool, kind of portray Deadpool's, I guess you'd say, madness. He won't ever shut up. He runs his mouth. Think of the best way to put it is a crossover of the Punisher and Spider-Man. Okay, Spider-Man's always got the jokes, but the Punisher's all, you know, he's got the weapons, but with a little psychosis thrown in there. Some other big things to remember about Deadpool to know about Deadpool. Deadpool has a healing factor. Now, he became a part of the Weapon X project. Now, the Weapon X project is what gave Wolverine, if you're familiar with Wolverine, gave Wolverine the adamantium on his bones and turned him, was with the purpose of using him as a government weapon. But Wade Wilson came to the Weapon X project for a cure for cancer, looking for a cure for his cancer. Apparently he had been diagnosed with cancer, comes to him, says, can you give me some, give me some help? Or more than likely Weapon X project came to him and said, we offer you the help. This is what you need to do. So they start the experiment on to try and give, and they give him the healing factor, but his skin just becomes like, I mean, it's like burnt flesh. You look at him, he looks horrible. He ends up, I don't know if he ends up escaping, how he gets away from the Weapon X project, but becomes a mercenary. Some really good skills under his belt, and proceeds to be, a killer for hire. But the key thing here is the healing factor. That's pretty much what allows Deadpool to live the way he lives. He's got a very accelerated healing factor. A lot of people say it's better than Wolverine's because Wade gets messed up by, and this is Wade Wilson, in other words, Deadpool, he gets messed up a lot in all his books, and he quickly recovers in a lot of them. Now, the book that we're getting into clearly, explicitly says on the front of it, parental advisory, not for kids, okay? I'm going to kind of go ahead and just give a brief cautionary note. I doubt anybody's listening to this with their children in the car or whatever, but just in case, I'm going to be describing some stuff that occurs in these books that is not very kid appropriate. Warning right up front, be prepared because it's going to get bloody, it's going to get gory, because there's a lot of stuff that goes down here. Okay, and one more thing. Deadpool is he's aware that he's a comic book character. That plays a huge part in this book. So there's going to be a lot of fourth wall interaction here. If you ever read any Deadpool books, this is a nod to his psychosis. He talks to himself a lot. So when you see it's not the thought bubbles, but the boxes that kind of indicate that this is what's going through the character's mind that's telling the story. When you see those in the panels, Deadpool actually interacts with those boxes. So you'll read something in a box and then he'll actually say something in response to what's going on in that box, and of course giving the illusion that he's talking to himself. All right, let me get into the creative team here real quick, just to give you guys an idea who wrote the book and who's drawing the book. Written by a guy by the name of Cullen Bunn. That's Cullen Bunn. Cullen Bunn. Penciler is Matteo Lolli. And inker Sean Parsons. Now, I don't recognize those names, so it's not like those are jumping off at me going, oh, wow. There's a little bit of your creative team. There's Veronica Gandini does the coloring. So let's go ahead and jump into issue one here, and we'll do a quick summary of issue one, Deadpool Killustrated. Strap yourself in, folks, because this is going to be a wild and crazy ride. Issue one, Deadpool has killed the Marvel Universe. All right? Those six words set up what's going to happen in this book. And not only has he killed the Marvel Universe, he's killed the Marvel Universes. He's gone through universe after universe and killed every single superhero. Now, the point of what he's trying to do here, this is going to get so incredibly, I believe the word is meta. The point of what he's trying to do here is he understands that he's a comic book character. So he wants to eliminate those that are creating these superheroes those who have created the superheroes and created himself. So he's trying to figure out a way to definitively kill off the Marvel Universe or Marvel Universes. Because in the beginning of this book, you see there's panels of all these heroes just slain. Spider-Man's packed on top of each other that Deadpool's killed. And he's killed everybody. He also wants to end his own life. he's trying to get out there and kill the person that created him because he doesn't want to live anymore. And that's not, you know, it's not like he has suicidal thoughts, but that's definitely prominent in the book. There's a point where he raises a gun to his head and pulls a trigger, but once he realizes that, well, they'll just rewrite me back into the book somehow. Okay? So yeah, we're starting off pretty meta. Deadpool realizes, okay, let's see what we can do. So he's got this team of villain scientists that he's kept alive, and he's telling them, okay, I need to slide. That's most appropriate term I could use, even though that's not a term that they use in the book. But he wants them to develop technology so he can figure out how to kill what he's calling the progenitors, these people who have created the Marvel Universe. So he's asking them to develop this technology so he can cross over. So all these villains got together and thought of a way to try and fulfill his wish, obviously, so they wouldn't die. And they give him some technology in order to do it. There is what I think it's the Thinker. Now, I could be incorrect, but the villain, the Thinker, he's telling Deadpool, look, this is what you're going to, this is what's going to happen. We're going to get you over into what we're going to term the Ideaverse. It's where we suspect all of the ideas came from for these superheroes that you believe that this world, all the ideas for this world could be based upon. This Ideaverse holds classic characters that gave other people inspiration to develop the Marvel Universe. Okay. That being said, they give Deadpool this bracelet and he puts it on his wrist and proceeds to jump into a different universe. Now, the first universe that he shows up in is the universe of Don Quixote. Okay. And we're going to be hitting a lot of classics here. So I think he ends up like showing up in Don Quixote's universe. I'm just going to give you a quick rundown of, I'm not going to go into each battle, but I'll tell you how Deadpool basically ends each one of these. Shows up in Don Quixote's universe, kills him by shooting him in the head, and I think he kills his buddy too. I wish I could remember his name off the top of my head, but I know he shoots him in the face. And he slides again out of that universe into another one. Goes into the book Moby Dick, and he kills the whale before Captain Ahab can get to it. I mean, Captain Ahab's right there. He ends up coming out of the blowhole of the whale, chopping his way out. And Captain Ahab's, of course, you know, ready to kill the whale and realizes, well, crap, the whale's already dead. Brings Wade Wilson, Deadpool, onto the boat. Now, there's a part in this book where when Deadpool's laying on the deck of the ship, he has Pinocchio in his hands. Now, Pinocchio was nowhere in this book up until that point when he pulls him on, or until he gets on the deck. He has Pinocchio by the arm and there's a knife sticking in his head. And then all of a sudden, the next panel is a flash of Pinocchio turning into the Vision. And we're kind of like, oh, what's going on here, you know? Well, he doesn't have any idea what's going on either. You know, Deadpool has no idea. So we're kind of left wondering what's going on. Deadpool then proceeds to start killing the crew of the boat, starts slashing everybody. You know, as he's slashing, we hit the last few pages of the book. It's Sherlock Holmes. There's a robed figure that's carrying this like piece of technology that's definitely not of the late 1800s. And we find out it's Sherlock Holmes, and Watson's asking, what is that? What is that you have in your hand? And Sherlock pretty much says it's a message. And I think the last part is him saying the game is afoot. And that's the end of issue one. Like I said, just in summary, we've got Deadpool hopping over into these classic books, jumping in and killing the main characters. He's killing the heroes of each one of these. Okay, now we're in issue two. Issue two, we're back on the deck of Captain Ahab's ship. Deadpool is slicing and dicing the crew up with his swords and his guns, and now he gets a hold of Captain Ahab and he's getting ready to kill him, and that flash starts to happen again. Captain Ahab is now turned into General Thunderbolt Ross, which is one of the antagonists from the Hulk series. Also turns into the Red Hulk, which was Thunderbolt Ross that ended up turning into at one point. But these flashes happen, and what we start to realize is that these characters are the inspiration for the Marvel Universe characters. So these book heroes are the inspiration for the Marvel Universe heroes. So it might actually be working that he's getting a hold of these people and killing them off. So he's about to kill General Thunderbolt Ross when all of a sudden the Nautilus from the 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea book pops up out of the ocean and starts grabbing the crew. When I first read it, I was like, oh my, what the heck is this? I had to do some research, but you know, they starts grabbing the crew in order to rescue them, and they get a hold of Deadpool and are about to unleash, you know, basically kill Deadpool. And Deadpool's like, all right, I'm out of here. Hits his little wrist thingy and boom, he's out of that book. All right. So Deadpool slides and the killing continues. And I'll just list them here real quickly. Tom Sawyer, he's killed while he was whitewashing his fence. Bram Stoker's Dracula meets up with Deadpool and gets his head cut off. Then we're reminded there that, you know, he's killing these characters off. It's killing the inspiration for the characters that these people become in the Marvel Universe. And he says at one point that, you know, there might be a point where I cause a chain reaction that eliminates myself. And the little voice inside of his head goes, yeah, then we will know for sure that we have won. So again, the suicidal tendencies that he has, or the suicidal wishes. He also runs into the Headless Horseman from Sleepy Hollow, which apparently was the inspiration for Ghost Rider and Green Goblin, because we see flashes of those. Deadpool ends up killing the guy inside the suit in horrific fashion, chomps the guy's head off that's in the Headless Horseman suit, chops the dude's head off and basically sets it down, hollows it out, and puts a candle in it. It says, wish granted, you're now a Headless Horseman. So, it's pretty scary looking. He then slides to Concord, Massachusetts, and ends up invading the cabin of Little Women. A lot of these stories, guys, I read comics. It's really hard for me to find time to read books. But, you know, a lot of these I recognize, I've just never read. But he ends up in the cabin of Little Women. Of course, he's fighting them off, but they're actually becoming too much of a force for him to take down. He ends up taking them out with a grenade. Apparently, they were inspiration for She-Hulk, Elektra, Black Widow, and they showed another girl there. I didn't recognize her, but anyway, he takes them out with a grenade, kills them off. Now, we find out that the evil scientists that were in the first book also sent out some probes, I guess is what I'd say, into the universes. After Deadpool went, he actually sent some probes out to different universes. And that's the technology that we saw Sherlock have at the end of book one. And it turns out these things have a warning message encoded in them that says, hey, we've unleashed this guy. You know, it might cause a really, really bad problem. So if you can, be prepared. Try to be prepared for him and see if you can take him out. That's pretty much the gist of it. Well, Sherlock has gathered himself a team to be prepared for Wade Wilson. We find out at the end of this book, he gets three people, including, and well, four if you want to count Dr. Watson. But we got three people. We got of classic literature lore. We got Beowulf, the monster killer, Natty Bumppo, which I had to look this guy up on Wikipedia. Wikipedia had no clue who the hell this guy was. Turns out he was the protagonist in what they called the Leather Stocking Tales, best known as the hero in Last of the Mohicans. Now that's a movie I know I've heard of. I've seen the video cassette cover. It's the last time I can remember seeing it. But anyway, Natty Bumppo, okay? A tracker, I guess, is what he is. And then we also have Mulan, which I'm pretty familiar with that character. Obviously Disney's rendition, but I did not realize that, you know, she was a classic literature person also. I know I'm pronouncing that wrong, but in her book or in her piece of literature, she had taken her aged father's place in the army. She fought for 12 years and gained high merit. So very skilled warrior. That's where we kind of leave issue two. So we got Deadpool's, in summary, Deadpool's going through, making his way through different books and killing off the heroes, taking them out in gory, ghoulishly bad fashion. But we have the one and only Sherlock Holmes getting some heroes together to try and stave off Wade Wilson and his rampage through the classics, I guess you would say. So, all right, let's get to issue three. Again, we pick up with the killing that Deadpool's going through here in issue three. He kills Ebenezer Scrooge. I assume that he was shot. Yeah, they don't really show it, but Ebenezer, I think, is visiting the Ghost of Christmas Future. And of course, it ends up being Deadpool. And Deadpool apparently had killed the representation of death in that book, which that would kind of defeat the purpose. But you see death laying on the back or laying on, well, maybe it wasn't death. Ghost of the of Christmas Future. Boy, somebody correct me. Send me something on Facebook. Let me know if that's who that, if death was the person in Ghost of Christmas. Let's try this again. Let me know if the Ghost of the Christmas Future was indeed death. I can just remember seeing, well, in my eyes, I see Scrooged, the movie Scrooge with Bill Murray, and I see that huge looking cloaked figure with the scythe. So, I mean, I'm thinking that's death. But anyway, Wade Wilson kills Ebenezer Scrooge. I think calls him McDuck at some point. He then makes his way to Frankenstein, Dr. Frankenstein, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. There's a key part in here because he actually somehow, prior to Dr. Frankenstein raising the monster, scoops out portions of his own brain. Deadpool scoops out portions of his own brain and gets it into Frankenstein's monster somehow. So when Frankenstein's monster actually raises and becomes alive, what we see is that iconic moment where Dr. Frankenstein raises the monster. Frankenstein gets up, grabs hold of Frankenstein's monster gets up, grabs hold of Dr. Frankenstein and swiftly breaks his neck. So we now have actually two Deadpools because there's obviously the original Wade Wilson, and then we have who we're going to refer to from here on out as Frankenpool because he's got Wade Wilson's brains and demeanor about him. Wade Wilson pretty much recruits him and says, okay, now you're going to help me out. So those two are now on a rampage throughout the classic literature, killing off people. We then go to, there's four or five quick little quips, just quick panels on one page. Island of Dr. Moreau, you see all the creatures that were created there, all slain. And you see Sherlock is getting there just after Deadpool's arrived. And we got Lilliput. Now, this is probably my favorite kill of this whole series. Lilliput was something I had to look up online again. I found out it was a village that was created, or a village that was in Gulliver's Travels. So, Deadpool proceeded, I wish they would have gone into this a little bit more, but Deadpool proceeded to just bring a bunch of cats to the island, and then all you see is these cats, like, chomping on all these villagers. They're just sitting there. Half of the villagers are hanging out the cat's mouth. You know, only Deadpool's going to think of something like that. We see Julius Caesar's Rome. Everybody's left in pools of blood. Then we get a key scene about the Jungle Book. So Deadpool and Frankenpool are in the Jungle Book, and they proceed to fight with, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, I'm sure, Mowgli and his panther friend. So they get into this big fight. We have an appearance by Baloo who comes in and starts fighting with Frankenpool. But just as you think they're going to be beaten, Deadpool tips his hat and says, well, wait a second. I didn't come here without any help. And Shere Khan shows up, the villainous tiger of the Jungle Book. Pretty much everyone dies except for Deadpool and Frankenpool. So they pretty much move on. We switch to Captain Ahab, who survived Deadpool's attack by the Nautilus saving him in issue 2. Captain Ahab and Captain Nemo are together on the Nautilus, and they're rescuing survivors from this shipwreck called the Hispaniola, okay? And there's an appearance, or they followed apparently the Little Mermaid, of all people, to this shipwreck. When they find a couple survivors, and when they pull them on, it turns out it's freaking Deadpool and Frankenpool. Ahab ends up getting run through by Wade's sword. Deadpool gets a hold of Captain Nemo and is about to, he has both his swords in a scissors fashion, and he's about to take his head off. And there's a flash, another one of those signature flashes, where Captain Nemo is apparently the inspiration for Magneto, the leader of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, the villainous Magneto. Villainous, sometimes heroic, Magneto of X-Men fame. So he doesn't cut off Nemo's head. Instead, he ties him to a torpedo and sends his ass out the Nautilus. And their target was the Little Mermaid. So Nemo's screaming as well as he can underwater, being shot, tied to this torpedo, and the torpedo hits the Little Mermaid, and the only thing that's left is her little tail, just kind of floating down to the bottom of the sea. Under the sea. So, Now Wade Deadpool, I guess I should say, Deadpool now has Frankenpool and the Nautilus at his fingertips. And so at the end of this book, at the end of book three, this is another thing I had to look up, and I learned some stuff, and I hope you guys do too. They head toward, they slide into a different classic, part of classic literature. Their targets are something called the Scylla, and I'm going to spell this for you, the S-C-Y-L-L-A, maybe Scylla, and the Charybdis. Charybdis, and we'll spell this for you, C-H-A-R-Y-B-D-I-S. Now, I straight up took some stuff off of Wikipedia just so I can give you an idea of the magnitude of what they're going to do. First off, these guys are pictured in the Deadpool Killustrated book as these huge, humongous monsters. And apparently, they were mythical sea monsters, as noted by Homer. Okay, if you're familiar with some of the writings of Homer, Homer's Odyssey. Now, one of the key things I didn't realize is that it's kind of like an idiom for a rock and a hard place. These two monsters were just far enough to where if you wanted to sail, take off and sail out into the ocean, you had to try and get past both of these monsters. If you tried to avoid one, you were closer to the other. And obviously that one would attack you. And then if you went the vice versa, there was no safe area. You had to pick one. And what they say is that it was idiomatic, for something similar to a rock and a hard place, where both of those things are, going to be a trial either way you look at it. One of them you're going to have to deal with. That's Scylla and Charybdis. Yeah, I'm butchering it. I know somebody out there knows exactly how these words sound and are yelling and screaming at me. But so the Nautilus is heading straight towards these monsters in hopes to take them out and erase them from existence. And that is how we end issue 3 of Deadpool Killustrated. Now our fourth and final issue of this story arc, issue 4, we pick up where Sherlock Holmes is hot on the trail of Deadpool with his band of classic literature heroes and heroine. And they're, again, just getting there after Deadpool had attacked, or Deadpool had attacked some type of classic reality. We again see Macbeth. We see Macbeth, Shakespeare's Macbeth. The witches are just laying in this cauldron, apparently had been boiled to death. So Wade had got there and taken them out. We see they get to the book The Raven, and Edgar Allan Poe is laying on the floor in a pool of blood. Some guy, now this one I didn't know what this was about. I'm sure if I would have did like another 10-15 minutes of research, I could have figured it out. But there's some guy that's laying dead in front of a painting, and it says London 1884. And there's a guy laying dead in front of this painting, and the painting has a white bullseye on it. Don't know who that is. Couldn't figure out what book it was. They then slide to a reality of a Kafka novel by the name of Metamorphosis, and they're at the apartment of Gregor Samsa, who apparently, in this book, this is a book I think I might want to actually read at some point, or a story I'd like to read at some point. It's about this guy who wakes up as a cockroach, basically. But anyway, they hop there, and there's this cockroach just laying in bed. There's an axe that had been used, and it, the cockroach is dead. So Sherlock is trying there. He just keeps getting there just too late. But he knows he's on the trail. He's on the trail. As a matter of fact, on the front of this issue number 4, it's got Sherlock leaning down with his magnifying glass, and there's just a bunch of Deadpool comics laying all over the place. And Deadpool, the ever jokester, is sitting above him with a larger magnifying glass, and he's focusing a sunbeam straight onto Sherlock Holmes's hat and engulfing it in flames. There's your Deadpool for you. So, picking up with Deadpool and Frankenpool and the Nautilus going after the two Greek monsters, apparently at some point they do this flash again where one of these monsters is a representation of the inspiration for Galactus. Deadpool shoots off these harpoon things from the Nautilus and just nails one of those monsters. Well, I think he nails both of them. Proceeds to dive the Nautilus down, dragging these monsters down with him. And he gets Frankenpool, and they both jump off of the, or jump out of the Nautilus, and the Nautilus proceeds to blow up, killing both of these monsters. So, Deadpool, of course, job's not done. Slides again, going into another piece of literature. This time he ends up in France, Paris, France, and is promptly greeted by the four Musketeers. So there's a point in here where Deadpool's just like, he's like, I was going to meet these guys anyway. I have a bone to pick with them. And he's basically upset about the fact that how can there be such a thing as a candy bar without peanuts? So he proceeds to attack the three/four Musketeers and, ends up killing all of them, as we've seen him do in the earlier three issues. But what he realizes is that after killing them, he's actually killed what he terms as the concept of a team. He says the Avengers, you know, the Defenders. He's actually, by killing the three Musketeers or the four Musketeers, he's actually destroyed the inspiration for a teamwork. And he also laments over the fact that he may have, you know, he also got rid of the Spice Girls. So, now Sherlock finally catches up with Wade Wilson and Frankenpool. He shows up and we have the battle that we've been waiting for, the climactic battle. And I'll go ahead and describe a little bit of it here. You know, we got Frankenpool. He is, of course, is the main guy that Beowulf goes after. And there's a point where Beowulf actually grabs a hold of Frankenpool's arm and rips it clean off. It isn't like he's using any type of blade here or anything like that. He basically grabs Frankenpool's arm and just rips it clean out of its socket. Frankenpool returns the favor by continually headbutting Beowulf in the face until his face sinks in and his eyes pop out. Pretty gruesome. Well, just when you think Frankenpool's got the upper hand, Beowulf obviously is dead, I believe, but Watson pulls out a gun and brains basically Frankenpool. Boom, shoots him straight in the head. We also have Natty Bumpo. I'm going to keep calling him Bumpo. There's not two O's on that. It's B-U-M-P-P-O. Natty Bumpo is attacking Deadpool. And he actually, Deadpool ends up throwing Natty onto Mulan's sword, pisses Mulan off. She's upset about it. And just before Wade's like, okay, I gotta get the hell out of here. And just before he can push his buttons on his wrist thing, Mulan comes over and slices his arm off, basically at the wrist. So this wrist thing that he's been using to slide between classic literature is gone now. But he looks over and he sees how Sherlock and the rest of these guys have been getting around. And it turns out it's H.G. Wells's modification has been made to the time machine. He heads over towards H.G. Wells's time machine, and of course Sherlock's quick in pursuit. They get onto the time machine, and a battle ensues. They're fighting each other, fisticuffs, if you will. What we find out is that, you know, as in the exposition, I guess, or as they're talking, we find out that the Ideaverse, this Ideaverse, has actually been trying to repair itself. So even though Wade's been killing off these heroes, it's trying to make compensation somehow. So it's trying to repair itself. Well, that is according to Sherlock. But what Deadpool ends up finding, or what Deadpool ends up revealing, is that he doesn't believe that's the case. He believes, even though the Ideaverse is trying to fix itself, Deadpool swears that he's made a difference by planting a seed that could change or ruin the greatest stories ever told. And the idea, that seed that he planted, is that heroes can die. They do this part where you show these kids reading, you know, we're going to get kind of a little bit meta here. They show this one kid's reading the Jungle Book. And, you know, the way the story ends, or I don't even know if it ends or if, because it looks like the kid's in the middle of the story, but the way the story occurs, Baloo ends up eating Mowgli instead of becoming his friend. There's also this kid at a comic book shop who's got a Deadpool comic, and it turns out it's Deadpool Illustrated, I think, number one. And he's like, look, man, he killed them all. He killed them all. It was awesome. So, you know, he's planted the seed that heroes can die. And Deadpool proceeds to fall off the time machine and just continually float in the time stream, I guess is what the time stream, while Sherlock Holmes is still sitting there on the time machine. The last page is of a frantic Sherlock Holmes floating on the time machine, struggling to remember what he has read. And you can see him start quoting some books, and his purpose now is to try and repair the Ideaverse. So he's going to apparently go back and do his best to repair it. And that is the end of Deadpool Killustrated. So what do you think? You think Deadpool came out on top in this one? I think, personally, in my opinion, I think he did. You know, even though he's floating in the time stream, left there for dead, you know, he's satisfied. He's satisfied with the fact that he's created that inspiration that maybe some creator will maybe kill him off at some point, and he'll finally be dead. very, very meta book. You're just breaking that fourth wall all to hell. And that's the whole point of it. Like I said, he's realized that it's time to, in order to die, he would have to kill those off that are in charge of his destiny. And that would be the writers at Marvel. I mean, that's pretty much the way it is. The writers and the creators at Marvel. Unfortunately, he did not get to that. I shouldn't say unfortunately, because boy, would it be horrible to see on the news that Marvel's offices in New York were devastated by some red-clad mercenary. Unless, of course, you're a DC fan. That might be something you'd love to see. But anyway, see, I say something and then I start to think of the actual impact, the meta impact that this book kind of does. It messes with your head. So would I recommend the book? Yeah. If you can get a hold of the book, it's a good series to have. Probably something, if you're a Deadpool fan, you'd probably want to read it just because this is a continuation, by the way. It's his continuation after he killed the Marvel Universe. There is a Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe, story arc out there where he, you know, proceeds to go and wreak havoc. And that's, of course, what happened prior to this. So if you can get your hands on it, great. And this would go along with it wonderfully. The good and the bad. The good, I think there's a lot more good to this book than there is the bad. I'm not a huge Deadpool fan, but I'll tell you right now, the covers are just wonderful. The covers are, you know, you got Deadpool, first issue, you got Deadpool throwing a bomb down Moby Dick's blowhole. You have the White Whale. The White Whale. The Adventures of Tom Sawyer is on the second issue. Tom Sawyer has apparently caught Deadpool with his stick and fishing line and hook. Deadpool is aiming a bazooka at his face. Ebenezer Scrooge is on the front of issue 3, and there's Bob Marley with the chains and everything but that's actually Deadpool. And then of course I gave you guys what was on front of issue 4 with Sherlock looking at a bunch of comics through his magnifying glass. But the art, what's cool about the art is it actually reminds you of, it looks old timey. That's about the best thing I can say. The covers really strike you as something that you normally don't see on a comic book here, especially in this day and age. But, you know, I love the art. Art inside the book is all right. I'm definitely up for blood and gore. That's me. If blood and gore is something that bothers you, Deadpool is not the way to go, especially this. I mean, there are some people getting sliced open, you know, half their jaw getting ripped off. It's in here. It's in this book. So would not recommend it for children. You know, I was actually sitting there worried about my own kids getting a hold of it just because I had it laying down on the kitchen table at one point. I was like, oh man, Caleb looks at this. Caleb, number one, would be like, oh, Dad, that's awesome. But I, as a 4-year-old kid, I really don't want him looking at that stuff. So that's maybe you could notch that in the good or the bad column if you want the blood and gore. Really, there's not a whole lot bad about it. I can't find any flaws in the story. Like I said, I'm not a big Deadpool fan, so I don't know if this is something out of character for him. I know that the guy is self-aware, and I think it fits in with what I know of the character. I can't find anything, you know, to really pick about it. Some people hate Deadpool. Some people don't like the humor. Some people think it's a waste of time, but I thought it was a decent story. I actually wanted to get my hands and read it all when it first came out. Luckily my buddy came through and let me borrow it. So I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much for joining us. Do not forget to subscribe to our new home by punching in W2M Network on just about any podcast platform. to get all of our content into your audio feed. Also, give a like to the Rattlitch in Broadcasting Network and W2Mnet.com Facebook page in order to stay on top of everything that we have to offer. If you'd like to follow the Source Material Podcast on social media, just follow @SourceMatCast on Twitter, and we are on Facebook @Source Material Comics Podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard, please feel free to share. We look forward to entertaining you again soon.